and I am on the way to hell. What is this thing?
Can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Matt Schneid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. Now, from July 31st, 1962, Gene Shepard is going to tell us why hats are important. Lost to Gene Shepard from the Heinz Collection, and if we don't get to it right now, we're not going to hear the end of it. Did I mention this is WBAI New York?
See, I know this chick, and she's got this little car, this little Nash Manhattan. And, you know, it's a little car, see, and it's got one of these little four-cylinder motors that go... By the way, that sound, a little problem. Let's try that again. Any of you hip mechanical male types, can you tell me what's wrong with this motor? Come on. I'll award the brass figure if you can tell me what's wrong. And don't call up and say the carburetor's out of adjustment. Well, anyway, she's sitting in this little thing, see, this Nash Manhattan. And she's waiting at one of the tunnels at the crucial hour. You know, there's always a crucial hour, see, and probably Fred Feldman is flying away somewhere up there in the sky. And she's surrounded, as far as the eye can see, by trucks, an enormous sea of trucks. And here's this little bitty car, you know, and she comes up to about the hubcap of one of these enormous Mack Jobs. It's standing there in front of her, and beside her is an enormous white, and behind her is an international, tremendous thing. And once in a while, one of them goes blah, blah, and shoots out a great big stream of diesel smoke right in her eyeball. Blah, blah. And then she slowly puts it into first, and then you hear the truck behind her. And oh, she can't hear anything. Her poor little radio is going. And slowly she's moving. It's like she's in New Jersey for 4 hours in one spot. Surrounded by the heat, the smoke, the steam, the roar, the bellow, the fumes, the angry implications of truck drivers. And right in front of her is this enormous Mack truck, and it looks like a cliff, you know, hanging over her. And directly in front of her windshield is a sign that's tagged onto the back of this truck, you know, and all around the sign are 400 different license plates, you know, West Virginia, Connecticut, Virginia, Rhode Island, all of them, see? And right in the middle of it is this great big sign that says, "Trucks make living easier." You never know where you're going to find it, you know. See, I have a feeling. Hello, hold it there. Hold it there. Stop blowing that bugle. I have a feeling. I'll pay. I'll throw a quarter in the drum. Take it out of there. Okay. You know, I have a feeling that every time a guy is aware of the fact that he is bugging somebody, he proceeds to proclaim loudly the opposite. You know what I mean? And so if, you know, it's quite aware, you know, everyone's quite aware that millions of people are worrying about health connected with cigarettes, for example. You watch the average ad on cigarettes on TV and you think that you get healthier by smoking cigarettes. Have you ever seen a short, fat guy smoking a cigarette on TV? Oh, no. Everybody's running around having a whoopee time, you know. Now they look like they're going to live forever, and you know, the sun is streaming through their eyeballs, and the moon is coming out of their ears, and underneath it says, "Men of action, people of fun, smoke whoopies." With the anti-sickness, live forever filter. And you see them fighting a great big fish, and they're pulling it in. The fish is obviously a cigar smoker. Well, while we're on the subject of cigar smokers, you know who pointed that out? It was a wild essay. I wish I had it here today. I thought I was going to bring it, and I forgot it and all that. Of all people, Brooks Atkinson, in this morning's Times, it was a wild thing. He says, he was talking about sex being inextricably bound with smoking cigarettes. And TV, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. You can count on a man that smokes a camel. Gets down off of that thing, and you know he's going to be up there guarding the ramparts, boy, when the Russians attack any good cigarette smoker. As a matter of fact, I'm perfectly honest with you, the most nervous people I know are cigarette smokers. I know a lot of little skinny cigarette smokers that you can see the light through. Seriously, you know, they're like guppies, very nervous guppies. And they sit there and they smoke their cigarettes. And I know one guy that has four cigarettes going at one time. Just all over his desk, he's got cigarettes going. And you can see his fluorescent light going right from one side of his head right out the other. You can see his typewriter right through him if he's staying in the right, because they're right in this right position there. And he's sitting there and he's smoking his cigarettes. He's looking out at you, little watery eyes, a little guppy, a little neon tetra. Oh, you poor little thing. And he's tried them all. He's tried the springtime cigarette, the one that gives the positive lift. He's tried the one with the hint of mint. He's tried them all. He's tried the one with the multiple filters. He's tried the one that is for kings, the king size one, the imperials, and he's still skinny and the light still shines through him, and his chick still doesn't dig him. He's tried it all of it. Next week he's gonna try 8-hour plug. He's gonna crack you on the back of him, but it's too late, old man. Oh, I'm with you. I love you. We all love you, old man. It's okay. Is everyone okay? I mean, you know, the truth comes out in such wild manners. Oh, e pluribus unum, in hop, curricula conk, in espitalauk. John Gorth, 76, drowned during the weekend when the power mower he was riding threw him into a pond. I mean, what are you going to do? Wouldn't it be great if they did newscasts like this and the newscaster really reacted to the news? John Garth was thrown into the pond and he died with a power mower. Just throw him right in. I got another one here for you.
said, an incoherent brunette took off her clothes, piled them on Pier A at Battery Place, and leaped nude into the Hudson River yesterday. And you don't want to hear that one. She says, I'm going to end it all. But she dog-paddled for over 2 hours before they caught her in the nude. Well, we got all kinds of things. I mean, what great newscast. You know, speaking of the truth, though, I mean, since we're here, we might as well face the truth. I kind of like dynamic phonyism when you spot it in action. Have you ever been spotted in something where you really laid an egg? I mean, they really caught you red-handed in a rotten, stinking lie. I mean, rotten. You're just standing there and it says, why, Charles, we thought that you were here yesterday. And the guy, you ran into the guy who said, you know, well, I haven't seen Charles in a month. Well, don't you remember, Fred? I was here yesterday. So oh, that's right. I came up to your office and just, I remember. Of course. And everybody's standing around pretending that they believe your rotten, stinking lie. And everybody knows it's a rotten, stinking lie. And especially you. Hey, you know, how about us all going out and eating snap for fun, huh? I'll set everybody up to hot dogs, huh? They'll have hot dogs and piccalilli. Why, sure, Charlie, we'll all go out. Phoenix, have piccalilli. Say, how did the Mets do? Everyone's frantically trying to change the subject. And you're standing there with rotten lie written all over you. Well, let me tell you what happened. In the Philadelphia Bulletin, which is next to Punch, is my favorite humor magazine. I'd say one of my favorite humor magazines these days is Harper's, in an unconscious way. But next to Punch, which is, consciously funny. They work awful hard. They're not very funny most of the time, actually. I'd say next to the John Gambling Show, my most favorite humor thing is the Philadelphia Bulletin. And the Philadelphia Bulletin the other day had a great picture of, and I read it to you, actress Anna Maria Alberghetti tells how a light bulb exploded during a performance of Carnival in Hollywood, injuring her eye and forcing her to wear a patch for 2 weeks. And there it shows her pointing at her eye, you know, and you can see this big white patch on her left eye, and she's all over the page. It's such a sad-looking picture, and it got so much mileage in the press. You know, it's so sad. I mean, isn't it terrible? Oh, Maria, I've got the light bulb exploded in her eye. And she went on. The show goes on. She's such a wonderful trooper, and we owe so much to Marie. Well, in the same town in Philadelphia, in another newspaper, is a picture showing Marie Alberghetti. And it's another brave one, and she's got her little jaw just sticking out, that little old wonderful square solid trooper's jaw that's given us so much, and she's powdering it, and it says, eye makeup. Singer Anna Maria Alberghetti wears eye patch as she bravely applies makeup in Los Angeles dressing room. Eye was injured when light bulb exploded near her on Carnival stage. However, the show must go on. The only trouble is the eye patch in photo number one is on the left eye. In photo number two, it's on the right eye. Tiny rotten thing. Oh, Maria Alberghetti. Oh, Anna Marie. We sympathize with thee in thy hour of travail. Light bulbs exploding on the set of Carnival. And in spite of all that, the show must go on, oh, Marie Alberghetti. We agree with thee, O Marie Alberghetti, that rotten, dirty press agent should have got fired, which you did finally do, allowing you to go on putting the eye patch first on the right eye and then on the left eye, you'd have spotted the rotten bum. O Marie Alberghetti, oh, wonderful little trooper, oh, starlet to the purple born, oh, indeed, carrier honor of tattered battle ensigns, standing upon the ramparts of bravery and danger, we salute thee tonight, O Marie. Oh, Anna Marie Alberghetti, tonight's brave human being. So let us all sing now for Marie. Na, 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 na. We love thee, O Anna Marie Alberghetti. Oh, little star. Nothing's on the face of the audience mind. Oh. you. It kind of makes you all puddle up. And when you really meet human bravery in its guttiest form, speaking of guts, this is WORAM at FM New York. When you meet it in its really real form, you just can't help but stand up and pull in your poor little sad tummy and say, why don't I have a solid backbone? Why don't I march forward and do what things really should be done? It's like the other day, you know, and I'll tell you, the truth comes out in wonderful form. It's like the other day, I'm listening to this radio station. It's one of these radio stations, you know, that come on with the hours of the long, long. There's some radio stations that have got a Frank Sinatra fixation. You know that kind? With the Frank, now here comes the chairman of the board. Here comes the greatest of them all. Ah, here comes Frankie himself. And here is little Peggy. And the chairman of the board comes on. And you know, that kind that's got the real hang up on Frank Sinatra and Tommy Dorsey. It's like everything stopped for this whole crew about 20 years ago. And Sinatra is singing and Dorsey is playing and all this stuff is going on. And in the middle of it all, the station says to you, this is WKLNUCK. Yes, the station with news in depth. The station that gives you news in depth all the way down to the bottom and the facts of all of it. Stay tuned for the 15-second news headlines, which follow in just a moment. And now the news in depth of City Hall, Mary Wagner, and now back to the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra. Oh, look at that. Oh, how melancholy, baby. Oh, won't you be mine, baby? Oh, walking down that old time lane with my baby. Oh, I'm paddling my own canoe, baby. Oh, and the moon comes over the Wabash, on the banks of the old Wabash. Oh, say hello to the crowd on Broadway for me. Oh, baby, I love you, baby. Well, you can't help but be happy and amused by it. You know, speaking anyone, I must give you a bit of a disclaimer here. I mean, I must admit that trucks do make living easier. All right, and whenever you're talking about the world, you must always say to the world, present company accepted. It ain't none of you we're talking about, of course. And that's a pen name there, Anna Maria Albaghetti. It isn't a real person there. Nobody can have a name like that. That's a real, just a nom de plume. Speaking of reality, did you see this wild? It just suddenly leaps out at you. Here's one. Again, you know, Philadelphia is a city where truth, the city of brotherly love, specializes in truth, among other things. And, oh, yes, that's what happens when you get involved with brotherly love. And there's a wild picture, again, from one of my favorite papers, that this is the Daily News in Philly, and it shows a guy. It's a very sad picture, you know? It really is. It shows a guy with his head buried in his hands, Walt. Now, just hold on there for a minute. It's a truth coming out. Now, don't you two guys hit each other on the back. Now, stop it, Babbitt, will you, for crying out loud. Old Babbitt and old Bromide, he got together again. Listen to this now. These two, here's a guy sitting there, see, and he's got his head in his hands. It's a really a sad picture, and I'm reading it, and I'm taken in by it, see. It says, Francis Quarter holds his head in soot-covered hands as he sits in dejection on the remains of his home in Glen Falls, New York. Quarter fled for his life as forest fires swept through community, destroyed 24 houses. He saved only his dog and his TV set. Did you notice what he saved? His dog and his TV set, both love objects. Never saw one. Well, that isn't all. I mean, if you think that isn't, if you think I'm putting it on, now wait a minute now. If you think it's only America that's hung up on TV sets, listen to this one. Did you hear this terrible item from London? London, July 23rd, United Press International. A coroner ruled today that Ronald Hanmer, 27, hanged himself in a fit of depression after his television set was repossessed. Wreck-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding. Wreck-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding
Speaking of great news notes from London, I can't help but say that we're all these little patches on the gigantic, patchwork quilt of humanity. You know, have you ever had the feeling that, you know, has it ever occurred to you that there is a gigantic Adam's hat store of existence? An enormous Adam's hat store of existence. Oh, yes. The hat store is very significant. Because the hat, are you aware that the hat has always played an important part, an important role in man's striving for identity? You could never imagine a cowboy doing anything without a hat. A soldier, an officer, must have a hat. If he doesn't have a hat, he's just another guy, you know, with dandruff and his hair sort of flying. Every picture you see of a great knight of the past, he wore an enormous plumed helmet. Or he had an ensign or some kind of a big square thing on his hat to set him off. Religious orders, and almost invariably, run to various kinds of hats. A hat is a very important thing. So it follows then that hat stores are important symbolically. Now hats, they don't keep a lot of breeze off your head. Many hats don't even do that. I mean, they're just hats. They're important hats. Sailors wear hats. Soldiers, everybody wears a hat. They're almost insane in the army about wearing a hat. Almost insane. I mean, there's a note of insanity about that. You walk out of the barracks without a hat, and believe me, you get the feeling after you've been in the army for about maybe 2 or 3 years that if you walk out of the barracks without a hat, boom, lightning, gone. Psh, little dust. Pair of shoes there, scorched. No hat. And you deserved it. No hats, Bill. You know, I'll tell you a funny thing. After I got out of the army for about 6 months, you know, I, as a note of defiance, I would not wear a hat. But do you know I could feel a hat on my head? I really could. I could feel it grabbing my earballs, just hanging there. And you know, it got so that this hat was so important on my head that I could feel it there, that when it would rain, my hair wouldn't get wet, even when I didn't have a hat. It was mental power was keeping the rain off. I had a mental hat on. And the guys used to say, well, Shep, would you please uncover when you're in the house? When you're in the oily room, take your hat off. I said, I don't have a hat. He says, yes, you have. Take it off. And I would reach up, and sure enough, that thing would come off. I wore a tin hat so long at one period of my life that if I hadn't worn that tin hat, Ed, I would have been at least a foot and a half taller. It caught me at a very, very important period of my life. I just took off those Brandy's cans. I'm this kid, you know. I go in the army. I put a pair of earphones on my head all the while I was growing. Didn't realize I was going sideways because of those phones. Look at my head. It's dumbbell-shaped. Look at that. I got a dumbbell-shaped head. With the earphones pressed in the middle with the ears, you know. Well, what happened? I get in the army and they give me this tin hat that weighed 400 pounds at least. Well, I'm in the army 6 days and the guy said, put your hat on, Mac. And you put that hat on, I'll tell you, there's a very wonderful feeling of security inside of a tin hat. Any of you guys know that? Any of you ex-GIs know that out there? There's a nice rushing sound all the time. It's like living in the heart of a seashell. You know how you put your ear up to a seashell? How would you like to have that all the time? It gets very lulling. You put this tin hat on, it goes... And then it rains, and you're... It's raining on the roof. It isn't raining on you. It's a nice feeling like you're in this little tin place. You know, it's raining on the roof. And then once in a while it would snow, and you would say, well, lucky I got the shutters on tonight. And there would be a big pile of snow on top of your helmet. And actually what it was, you see, you met the shutters. What you had on was your little knit cap. They have a little knit cap that puts on under the hat, you know. And it hangs down over your eyes. And it's a great feeling of security. Wonderful feeling of security. How many of you guys would like to go down to the office tomorrow wearing your helmet liner? And then you have your... See, and then on Friday, when things are really rough, when they do on the fire ring, or like at the Christmas party when they're getting ready to give you the axe, you go down and you got your full tin hat on. Snap it right over the helmet liner, the whole bit, you know, with the webbing inside. You got the little knitted beanie hanging down on you. And then you wear the chin strap. The one that comes down right under, you know, the tank strap. Boy, let them hurt you then. Walk into Mr. Bolivar's office with that on. Couldn't touch you. Great feeling. And the wind is howling around through it. So hats are important. And so,
Here we are, walking through the Adams hat store of life. Some guys, well, just by nature, some guys are Homburgs. Other guys are little beanies with propellers on top in the vast hat store of life. And there's nothing you can do about it. If you go through life and you got little red and white stripes on you and you got a beanie in your soul with a little propeller sticking out of the top and a little thing that says on the front of it, Corky, right, what are you going to do? And then, of course, there are other guys that are just soft, crumply, easily disposable berets. Just wrapping little round things. You know, so vaguely foreign, you know, that kind. And hip. Vaguely hip, and yet somehow sadly dated. You know, hipness is getting extremely dated. Do you know what's in hippies? Squareness. Yeah, obviously. I mean, do you realize some guys are so square that they're in? I mean, so unhip that they're so far in that nobody will ever touch them. You'll never be as in as Lawrence Welk. No matter how hard you work at it, Dad. No matter how many cowboy songs you sing down there in the Fiend John, you'll never get it. I'm telling you, it's not going to do it. Oh, by the way, that's another thing that's hip. All the guys who live in the cities, all the real hip guys that live in the cities are developing a tremendous illusion that they're all Westerners and that they're all cowboys. No, seriously, are you aware of that? And furthermore, this illusion takes many forms. The hipper you get, the more childish your food becomes. Like, I know one guy down in the village who for over a year and a half has lived exclusively on Cracker Jack and Milky Ways. You see, when he was a kid, I mean, Cracker Jack and Milky Ways, that was a good thing. Now he's 48. And he goes, "Hey, Mom!" He runs out, he says, "Hey, got a nickel? Anybody got a nickel? The Cracker Jack man's going by. Maybe I got a prize." And he runs out and he buys a Cracker Jack. You know, spends all of his day down at the ad agency and eating Cracker Jack at night. Well, then, you know, that's filling in all kinds of life. It is no wonder that we are in the only nation in the world that believes completely in the premium stamp philosophy. I mean, green stamps, gold stamps, plaid stamps, King Kong stamps, Socko stamps, Powie stamps, all of those stamps are just an extension of the box tops that the louts saved when they were kids. The same ones, you know, and they've missed that day. And you know, you can't say box tops when you're 49. And it's kind of silly, you know. How much Wheaties can you eat, you know? And yet you have the terrible desire to say box tops and gum wrappers and all that little crud, you know? So now you say stamps, same thing. You try to tell an insane stamp saver that they pay more for the groceries where they get the stamps and that they're actually paying for that lamp like four times more than they'd have paid if they'd have gone to the dime store and got it in the first place, and they'll look at you as though you're un-American. That is a factoroony. I know one cereal outfit that is planning to do away with cereal. It's getting in the way of the premiums. The truth, you know? And in fact, there is one supermarket on the island that is giving up selling stuff. They deal in stamps, exclusively stamps. And there are three funeral parlors in Queens that are already setting it up. Can't you just see people sitting around saying, you know, I got over 400 stamps for Fred when he went? And somebody says, well, you know, we went to the Buy Do We Live A While funeral parlor, and you know, they only gave us 350, and I certainly told them. I told them when I found out that I could have got over 700 for Carl if I'd have gone out to Mineola. Well, I think it's a fitting memorial. It'll be a fitting memorial to Fred. But sitting over there in the corner is a TV chair with a sliding out TV dinner tray that was paid for by stamps that were garnered at his funeral. I think that's going to make Fred feel better throughout all eternity. It's terrible. Oh, he should have been worth more than that. I mean, maybe a spare tire for the Plymouth. You know, speaking of cars, while we're on the subject of cars, now that we brought that up, well, the Adams hat store of life, we haven't finished with that either. Don't worry about it. What kind of a hat are you? A shoddy cap? Little sporty with a thing in the back, you know? A little buckle there in the back, you know, it kind of snaps down. Living forever in the open cockpit of an MG of existence. Ready to blow off any minute now and into the bushes. Along the vast superhighway of life. Ready to cut out any minute now. Huh? Or are you one of those paper caps that they make out of the editorial page of the Daily News? You know the kind? I wonder how many guys listening out there tonight are whoopee paper hats for parties. You know, the kind that look like Napoleon hats, cut out of gold things, little pom-poms all over. That's mostly Chicksville, I'm afraid. I know what chick. Oh, well, that's another story. She was made completely out of crepe paper. It was a wild discovery. But, you know, the further you get, the more you get involved into this thing, the more you see that there's more than meets the eye, you know, and you wonder where it's going to stop. Or if it ever will stop. Now, oh, speaking of cars, you want to talk about cars? Well, I'll tell you. How long has it been since you've been on the coast? I mean, the coast. How's that for an official phrase? The coast. I'm on a coast, Fred. Don't bother me. Yeah, I'm talking about the coast, yeah. That's always good for a laugh in the office. How long has it been since you've talked to the main office? Or is all of mankind bugged with the sneaking suspicion that at the main office, your branch office is about to be cut off and backed away from the trough? Oh, you're aware, of course, that the main office concept is closely allied with the paradise concept that runs through almost all religions. That working for the main office is paradise. Or do you see heaven as a vast main office where everyone is about to become a vice president and everyone has a carpet on the floor and a sign on the door and the Bigelow man has just left? And it's one enormous coffee break. Or do you prefer one enormous conference that goes on throughout all eternity, and you can all sit there and chew your cigars and know that you're not going to get fired because the chairman of the board is God himself. And he loves you all. Or do you look upon God as an avenging chairman of the board who has just discovered what you've been doing with the books and is getting around to telling you in his own way? These are various concepts, you know, that are very valid. And don't anybody write me an angry letter saying Shepherd is anti-God. And while we're on the subject of cars, you know, speaking of that fascinating world that we live in, it has always occurred to many people, you know, everyone says the cars, the state is simple. Don't for a minute believe it. If you go out to the West Coast, and I think that the West Coast, because it is really the newest part of the country, in many ways, it is the newest part of the country. And since it's the newest part of the country, technology has had the greatest impact upon it, and modern civilization really is much more advanced out there than it is right here. You know, in New York, we're still clinging to a lot of old things, a lot of old ideas. Well, you don't cling to old things when the whole city you live in is about 40 years old. What old things are there to cling to? Some old funeral parlor sign or something that you remember when you were a kid or something like that? Well, that's what the coast is. Now, what has this produced out there? Interesting thing. It has produced the first slight elements of a suggestion, a hint of what the future world is going to be like. Now, out here in the East Coast, automobiles still mean something. Let's just take a typical product of our time, the automobile. What is the attitude? It's the attitude that people have towards the things around them that really denote what a time is and how a time works. It's the attitude of the people towards their world that set the Elizabethans off, let us say, from the men who had preceded them in the Middle Ages. That's the only difference. And the men of the Middle Ages were set apart from the men in the pre-Christian era by their attitude towards the things around them. And the men even earlier than that, the early Egyptians, 4,000 years ago, were set apart from you by the way they looked at the earth, the sky, and the things that happened to them, birth, death, and life. If they thought of these things the same way you think of them, they would be like you. But they are not, and they weren't. Now, using that thesis as a basis for discussion, the attitude of man towards the things around him denote what part of time he is living in. We in the eastern part of the country, being the oldest part of the country, are still looking at things in a very different way from those who, say, live in the Midwest, which is newer than us, and those who live on the far West Coast, who they're the newest of all. So they look at things even in a different way.
So we here in the East, we still cling to a lot of the 19th century beliefs and beauty and that sort of thing. For example, almost all of the musical comedies that we watch here in the East, which seems to be a major obsession with the Eastern theater goers, are firmly based in the Sigmund Romberg, Rudolf Virmel, Victor Herbert, late 19th century pattern. It is almost impossible to tell Richard Rodgers from Victor Herbert at certain points. Now, if you take a look at a Midwestern playwright or a Midwestern musical writer, Meredith Willson, his music immediately is a set in a different climate, different temperature, different attitude. It is not European in context. It is not Rudolf Frimmel in style. And to show you what I mean by Rudolf Frimmel, a good example of that kind of love song of the past can be seen in Rodgers' work in such a thing as, oh, what a beautiful morning, oh, what a beautiful, oh, oh, oh. This is right out of Sigmund Romberg. Yes, it's Victor Herbert again. It's Indian Love Call all over again. It may be louder. It may be orchestrated a little differently. It may be set just slightly into the 20th century, but not much. It's Rosalie. It's Rosalie, only with a slight emphasis removed from the man and added to the woman. Where the love song is not sung to anybody in particular, but directed up to the audience. You don't really believe that Ethel Merman is in love with the guy on the stage. She's in love with the audience. You don't really believe that Mary Martin is singing to the poor guy who's playing opposite her. She's making love to the audience, which is our contribution to it. Earlier, they sang to one another, but that's just a slight difference in emphasis. However, as we go further west, we run into some very interesting things. Here in the East, the automobile is still vaguely a status symbol. If you own car X, you are one thing. If you own car D, you are another. It becomes less as you go out to the Middle West. Are you aware of that? And disappears completely in the West Coast. Because you see what happens out on the West Coast. The automobile is totally and completely integrated into society. That a man has to have a car, and a car is as much a part of him as his shoe. Have you noticed shoes are not status symbols? In the East here, nobody looks down at your shoes and says, gee, you must be an important man. You've got big shoes. Very important shoes. Well, that's the way a car is on the West Coast. And interestingly enough, the automobile has become a kind of beer can on wheels. It is disposable, like shoes are disposable. The car is no longer a symbol of affection either in the West Coast. For example, things that are not disposable. The early Industrial Revolution produced things which were designed to be permanent because they didn't understand the nature of the Industrial Revolution. So when a guy made a wagon, he thought he was making a wagon for all time, you know, and he made it with a machine. He didn't realize that this wagon, if it was going to continue to operate his factory, would have to be disposable. And so gradually as we got into the Industrial Revolution, more and more of the things became disposable as they were made. They were not made to last at all. And I'm not talking about obsolescence. I'm talking about disposable. That's very different from obsolescence. You would not call a used Kleenex obsolete, would you? You would call it used. And it is disposable. Well, nobody pretends now that when he gets rid of his 59 car, it is obsolete. It goes just as good as the 62. It does everything the 62 does. And in fact, looks a great deal like it. But it is disposable. He has used it. And so you dispose of it with no more emotion nor any more ties to it than you would a piece of Kleenex. Do you know that disposing of a Kleenex 100 years ago would have caused a lot of excitement? Because handkerchiefs were made to be kept. And we're also status symbols. Are you aware of that? Oh, yes. A low-grade man did not carry the lace handkerchief of the dandy. Believe me. And they were meant to be permanent pieces of your apparel. And so gradually, as the Industrial Revolution turned out more and more and more and more and more handkerchiefs and more lace handkerchiefs and more Kleenexes finally, the handkerchief disappeared completely as a status symbol. And do you know that that's why we wear a little handkerchief in our coat? When a man is dressed, he puts a little handkerchief folded up in his breast pocket. Many years ago, a man who was a wealthy man put a lace handkerchief there to let you know he was a lace handkerchief man. And a guy on a lower level did not stick a bandana in there. He put nothing there. And so it is with the automobile. And the car today, out on the West Coast, has blurred completely. It doesn't make any difference what kind you own. You drive the car, that's all. And it's disposable. You get rid of it. They have long lines of used car lots that run all night, like bars. I mean, like miles of them, like bars they run. If a guy wants to get rid of his car at 4 a.m, he goes and throws it out and gets another one. Just like a Kleenex. Are you aware of that? Now, the thing about these cars is that they bear a great resemblance to beer cans. Because all beer cans look alike, except for the trim on them. Today, I defy you to stand across the street and tell a Buick from a Pontiac. They're almost impossible to tell apart. It's almost impossible to tell a Chevy from a Ford apart. Well, now you're going to say, I can. Well, yes, you can tell a Rheingold can from a Budweiser can, but only by the trim. Only if you know the label. And only if you know that Budweiser has one color and Rheingold has another. But remove all that paint and they look alike as all beer cans. They're made on the same last. Because they're made to be disposed of. Who cares the shape of your Kleenex? They're all, no matter what brand you buy, they all look the same from 3 feet out. And that's what's going to happen to the cars more and more. It's just an automatic thing. And the automobile is now a moving beer can. Have you noticed that the automobile is literally decorated as a package is? Remember, it's a moving package now. It's no longer a conveyance. It is a package. A beer can is a package. Are you aware of that? Well, an automobile is a package for people. And it is decorated like packages today. Now packages are decorated in many ways, not necessarily and very rarely functional. The color of the Wheaties package does not make any difference in how the Wheaties taste. The picture on the Wheaties does not make any difference on how the Wheaties run, how they taste, or anything else. The package is designed to sell, period. That's all that the function of that package is. It also, incidentally, carries the Wheaties or the Rice Krispies. The automobile is designed just like a disposable product to sell, not necessarily to go. But the going is an incidental byproduct. And so once it is sold, its main function has been achieved. Its next main function is to be disposed of, just like the next main function of the Kleenex is to be thrown away. Once it is sold, then there's only one thing you can do with it. Just as with the car, once it is sold, it is meant to be disposed. Now, interesting, everyone knows that this is not planned obsolescence, so don't immediately say that's an old concept. It is not. It's a very different concept. And the people who ride in them have the sense, of course. They're different kind of people from you and I. It's, when you're in a car on the West Coast and you remark on a guy's car, he's surprised. It's just as if you meet a guy and he's got a beer can and you remark, say, that's a very pretty beer can you've got there. You should be proud of that beer can. What do you mean? Okay. You say, no, that's a lovely beer can. Look at that. You've got a gold top on it. It's a very beautiful. It's a beer can. Are you out of your mind, beer can? He says, watch, I'm doing a beer can. Pow, look at that. And boing, 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 he throws it in the street. Give me another one. I'll show you that. I got another one there. You cannot get it through the West Coaster's head that this car is any more than a beer can. And in fact, the most interesting thing is that recently there was a guy in the paper who was an actor in TV shows, just a little mediocre actor, who had owned in 3 years over 800 cars. Yeah. So it's obvious that it was just like owning that many beer cans. I mean, they were not cars anymore. They were things to be disposed of, to be gotten rid of, to be thrown out. And as the man rides, oh, what does this do to the people inside the cars? Well, it's like their houses, you see. A house is not a thing you live in. It's a thing you stay in until you move to the next house on the coast. Houses are also disposable on the coast. And so no one ever looks upon a house as a permanent thing out there. It's the thing he is in now until he can get to Beverly Hills, which will be the place he is in until he finally really makes it and moves out to the top echelon out of the East Coast. But the house, you see, is as disposable as his Kleenexes. And for that reason, he spends all of his time just decorating them, you know, putting little things, hanging little baubles and bells. It's a package for himself. And it's decorated like a Wheaties package. on the outside. His car is decorated like a Rice Krispies package. And don't laugh at the West Coasters. They are but a symbol, they are but a spearhead of what is to come. And that within, I'd say, 3 years, we will all be engulfed in that beautiful world.
Gene Shepherd, July 31st, 1962. Hats are important. And cars are disposable. And that's it. We're clean out of time. I'm Max Mead, your curator and janitor. Thanks for tuning in next week. Probably episode 3 of Exploring Tomorrow, another mysterious traveler, more behind the green door, and another lost episode of Gene Shepherd. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week, and I'll be here Sunday night, 8 to 10, for the Golden Age of Radio.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal.